It's 4:06. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Mike Arnold, and for Rob Barrett. Coming up, we'll explore the messages and meaning of music from the Vietnam War era with a Vietnam veteran and former Army journalist.
Another round of nasty weather is passing through the state this weekend, just as travelers hit the road for the holidays, as it turns out.
Joining us to tell us what to expect over the next few days is Jeff Last. He's a warning coordination meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Green Bay. Jeff, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
So some of the severe weather's already passed through the state, but there's still some watches and warnings in effect right now, kind of across the state. What should people expect if they're going to hit the road this afternoon or evening for the holiday?
Well, we did have some snow across central and northeast Wisconsin and freezing rain across the south earlier today, and some lingering flurries or freezing drizzle continues. So roads are still slick across a good portion of Wisconsin. The big news, though, certainly is what's to come late tomorrow night into Sunday as a new winter storm takes aim on the Great Lakes states with heavy snow here in about the southeast half of Wisconsin.
How much of the state are we talking about that's going to get hit this time? Is it pretty much all of Wisconsin, or is there a part of it that will be spared?
Well, I'd say the southeast half of the state, say from La Crosse to Marinette and southeast, we'll see anywhere from 3 to 9 inches, depending on where you're located. The heaviest corridor of snowfall we're expecting at this point looks like it'll fall from about Janesville, Beloit area, northeast to Sheboygan, perhaps north of Port Washington, in that general area, where we'll see 7 to 9 inches. Here in Green Bay, the Fox Valley, anywhere from 5 to 7 inches is a pretty good bet. And the Milwaukee area could see as much as 8 inches as well. Again, most of this will be falling early Sunday, say from about midnight until 10 a.m.
So that kind of mixed with sort of the rainy-ish stuff that's been going on, too. I'm sure that's a meteorological term, isn't it, rainy-ish? But you know, sort of the mix in precipitation probably makes it even worse in some ways, right?
Well, certainly those roads that are not going to be attended to, they're going to get worse as we get into the late night hours tomorrow night into Sunday morning. The good news is, though, those roads that are being salted heavily because of the freezing drizzle and snow that we had today, you know, that salt will be effective at least at the onset of the snow late tomorrow night. But regardless, people really need to be careful if they're driving any time, especially on Sunday.
Do you have any sense of what we could expect around Christmas Day, or is there going to be more coming up? Or?
Well, it looks like temperatures will become quite a bit colder behind the Sunday snowstorm, with highs on Monday only in the teens across much of the state. There could be another fast-moving weather system that could bring some light snow, maybe an inch or two, across portions of the state on Christmas Eve day. I don't want to forget to mention there could be some lake effect snow up in the Lake Superior snow belt of northwest Wisconsin on Sunday afternoon and Sunday night behind the snowstorm that affects the Great Lakes.
So people have, I don't know, got to get to Grandma's house or something by Monday. Do they have what's the window of opportunity to get there before the storm hits?
Well, I think if people can do their travel, whether it's for shopping purposes or otherwise, if they can get that done tomorrow or wait until Monday, you know, you'll be in pretty good shape. The worst day, obviously, is going to be Sunday. Again, this is not going to be a blizzard type of snowstorm on Sunday. The wind won't be too bad, but certainly the accumulation of snow on the roads will make travel difficult, especially the first half of Sunday.
Well, Jeff Last, thanks so much for joining us today. Jeff Last is a meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Green Bay.
Thank you.
And while you get ready to head home for the holidays, others are gearing up to make sure the roads are safe and sound despite the frightful weather that's headed our way.
We thought we'd take a few moments to get an inside glimpse into the life and sometimes overlooked work of a snowplow driver.
Tony Barlow joins us now. He's the Streets General Supervisor for the City of Madison. And before that, he spent 15 years as a snowplow driver. Tony, welcome to Central Time.
Welcome.
So if you were driving plow, as you did for 15 years, you see a storm like this coming, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking I'm going to need a lot of rest tomorrow in the morning, try to get all my plans taken care of, knowing that I'm going to be busy the next week, clean up and plowing and removing snow.
Now, being a snow plow driver for 15 years, I bet you had a lot of inconvenient times where you'd have to be out on the roads.
Oh, that's correct. And then, you know, when as I first started, you'd have to go pick trash the next day. So you would plow night and pick trash the next day. So you would have a long week ahead of you, especially with the amount of snow they're talking about for this weekend.
Now, I would have to think that there's part of it that's kind of fun, though, because, I mean, you're doing something that could save people's lives, being out there on the street, and it's probably fun to drive a snowplow, right?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of rewards to it. I mean, you're making the road safe, you're helping people get unstuck, and making sure there's no accidents on your route, which helps everybody. There's a lot of reward to it.
Is Mike right, Tony? Is it kind of cool to be up there from the bird's eye, the cockpit there, driving a snowplow in the middle of these blizzards and things?
Yeah, you know, most people, I mean, there's been many nights where you hardly see any cars when it's really, really bad out. You'll be driving through 3-4 foot drifts. I remember when John Nolan one night blew all the way shut, and the cops had to shut it down, and we had to go through there and open it up, where it was almost, up to 3/4 of the truck high.
Wow.
So a lot of people don't see that, or there's been nights where it's kind of scary because it's totally covered with ice and the truck's sliding from side to side, and you wonder how you made it through the night.
I mean, that's true. There's nothing magical about a snowplow that it somehow has more. I mean, are there times when snowplows go off the road?
Oh, many times, yeah. I've seen a couple on its side. I've never had that happen, but I know I've used the plow several times to try to slow down or run along the curb to try to get the truck stopped, that's for sure.
And there are probably times when you're a snowplow driver that you're sort of the first person to come across accidents, too, for people who've been trying to...
Yep. Yeah, you'll see a lot of different things running at night. That's all. So we try to help out as much as we can.
Now, I got to preface this by saying I appreciate so much what the snowplow folks do, but is it absolutely necessary that they plow in our driveways after we've shoveled them out?
Well, I'll tell you what, I've seen shovels come flying at the truck, but no, we hate to do it, but we have to do it to be efficient. You know,
yeah.
we can't clean out everybody's. We wish we could, but we can't, so...
And I would guess, I mean, in your position now, do you sort of supervise the people who drive the snowplow? So you sort of coordinate them?
Yep, coordinate them, make sure the trucks are all set up, make sure we got everything in the row. So it's we got sand coming in today, we got more salt coming in tomorrow. So we're just, trying to get everything ready.
Yeah, sort of staging. You're kind of in the staging phase right now. And do you line the trucks up and kind of get them ready to go? How does that work?
Yep, we put all the plows on any piece of equipment that's, not usually on for snow and ice, say a garbage truck, we'll put a plow on that or
No, really?
That,
wow.
Yeah, that picks up the large items or whatever kind of, we call it iron, that we can put out there, we get ready today. So they all got the plows on and sand in the back for balance. And
Now, when you became a snowplow driver, did you do it because it was something that you've always wanted to do, or was it a good job? Or
it was a good job.
Yeah,
I'd have to say that, but then it turned into, the responsibility of it and started, really having the opportunity to move up through the city and really turned into a career more than a job then.
Now, as far as salt goes, what do we need to know about how salting the roads works? Because I understand sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't right away. It kind of depends on the temperature.
So when a snowstorm starts off, the first thing we want to do is we want to get around the salt down so the snow doesn't, like when you drive over it in your driveway, it sticks if it binds to the concrete.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to get that first bit of salt down so that the snow doesn't adhere to the road. And then once we keep going through the routes, we plow it off, and then we put more salt down to keep that from happening. And then what was the question again?
We're talking about salt a little bit.
What do we need to know about how it works, basically?
Jeff Last, the meteorologist that we had on just a minute ago, said that actually right now it's good that in some areas it rained first, and now you have the salt down, and then if a bunch of snow comes.
So there'll be a little bit of a leanway, we call it, to respond. We also do, we'll pre-wet the road with salt, so that gives us a little more response time. But as the snow comes heavier and heavier, then it starts to stick to the road again. So you
got
to put
start
more
catching
down.
Up with it again.
Right.
Yeah.
It's where the city, you know, and the residents got to understand is when it gets really cold out, like 15 degrees or below, that's where we start to lose, you know, what salt can do for us. It's, you know, it doesn't work as good. So it takes, you know, when the sun comes out and the sun hits it, then it starts to melt the roads again.
So if you had sort of practical advice to people who are driving around on the streets along with snow plows, what advice would you give to drivers and people in general?
I would have to tell them just to give the drivers some time. You know, be safe out there. Take your time. Leave early for work. And when you see them coming, if there's an accident or something, let them through. You know, they'll solve it. And just give them some time.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and thanks for the hard work you do out there in the snow.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. That was Tony Barlow, the Streets General Supervisor for the City of Madison. He helps coordinate the snowplow drivers across Madison. He previously spent 15 years as a snowplow driver.
Coming up, we'll explore the messages and meaning in Vietnam-era music.
This is Central Time. I'm Mike Arnold.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, Noah Ovshinsky rounds up the top stories in Wisconsin news and politics.
First, music played a big role in the United States during the Vietnam War for protest movements and for troops deployed overseas.
Joining us now to share some songs from the Vietnam War era is Doug Bradley. He's a Vietnam vet and former Army journalist. His forthcoming book with Craig Werner is called We Gotta Get Out of This Place. Doug, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Veronica. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us a bit about why music is so important for troops and was so important for those troops in the Vietnam War.
Well, there's a variety of different answers to that, but the main one is the music was so good. It was so prevalent, and we all listened to the same music. Radio was our internet then, and we all listened to the same songs, the same formats, the same artists. And there was something about that that connected us as a generation. And for a lot of Vietnam vets that Craig and I have interviewed, it was a way for them to sort of understand their experience, to begin to express what went on, and for them to heal and get back home.
And in some ways, the words probably had different meanings if you were in Vietnam, too, I would think.
It's absolutely amazing to realize how right you are, Mike, and how often that happened. Of course, you can think of obvious songs, Leaving on a Jet Plane, Otis Redding's Dock of the Bay, because even though they're not necessarily about Vietnam, you can see how they would for a husband and wife or a boyfriend and girlfriend separating, or for somebody waiting to go from San Francisco, where a lot of us departed from to go to Vietnam. But there are other songs, some of which maybe we'll play some cuts from and we'll talk about, and maybe some listeners will call in about, that really had several layers of meaning depending on where you were at that time in your life, especially depending where you were in Vietnam.
What's an example of a song like that that had layers?
Well, one of the great examples that we use is Chain of Fools by Aretha Franklin. Aretha Franklin was, you know, the queen of soul at the time, hit after hit after hit. And Chain of Fools was one of her big hit records. If you were in America at that point and heard that song, it's about a woman getting tired of the guy, sort of leading her around. We had a lot of those songs by feisty women. Aretha was one of the best. If you were black in America at that time, that song was about the civil rights movement. And you understood that. As an African-American in this country, if you were a black soldier in Vietnam and heard that song, it was about the chain of command, and it was about the breaking down of the chain of command, particularly as it affected the sort of racial disparity that we had in America that was also prevalent in the Army. So a song that we all enjoy, could listen to, you know, tap our feet to dance. Takes on a whole nother kind of complexity.
Well, let's listen to it and see if we hear it differently now. So here's Chain of Fools. Now, as I listen to Chain of Fools, as your first example, one of the things that I realize is, and I think you've written about this before, is that there are a lot of stereotypes of the kind of music that people listen to in the 60s that are perpetrated by movies. Isn't that true?
Absolutely true. In fact, there are really very few good Vietnam movie soundtracks. Everybody thinks of Good Morning Vietnam, which has more than its share. It's a bit cliched the way we see it now and hear it now, and that's why you don't get a lot of songs like the one we just talked about. And that line that comes up in there with Aretha says, "The chain's going to break," was, heard, like I said, very strongly by black soldiers in Vietnam.
Now, what's one of the most stereotyped songs that you hear all the time?
Well, you hear a number of things all the time. One of them that we end up talking about quite a bit is leaving on a jet plane,
right?
Because of the message that's inherent in that.
Yeah, but that probably, I mean, people wanted to rock, I guess.
Well, I'm.
So that song was sad, and I'm sure it
remains
moving,
that way. You hear a lot of Creedence. I mean, Fortunate Son is something I think is in almost in every film. Forrest Gump, it's it. But the wonderful thing about it is it does fit. And Creedence was one of those groups in Vietnam that sort of went across barriers. Country guys could like Creedence. Guys that like soul could like Creedence. The sort of stoners, the guys that like the Doors, could like Creedence. So it really fits, even though it's played a lot. But in the case of Creedence, it works because they were a real important band and they had something to say. And John Fogerty had been drafted, ended up getting a medical discharge when he was in the service.
Could we listen to Fortunate Son a little bit? Because maybe people don't know that by the name, but if you hear it, you'll know it. So.
Interesting with these songs, people were listening to them who weren't in Vietnam, the counterculture was listening to them, and yet they meant something different if you were in Vietnam. Was it just happenstance that you could read these things into them, or was there something, something zeitgeisty going on that even though someone might not have written the song explicitly about Vietnam, that Vietnam War ended up infusing that song anyway?
I think that's true. I think it's a little bit of both. I do think, as we know, you talked a little bit about protest music, and everybody hears For What It's Worth and thinks it's a quintessential, the Buffalo Springfield song, protest song of the era, which wasn't written about student protest, wasn't written about the Vietnam War. But that's, like you said, that's how it sort of came to pass. The same with some of the songs that we're talking about now. The other interesting thing is that, in some ways, the counterculture generation got drafted too. I mean, there weren't a whole lot of ways out of that, especially when you lost your student deferment. And even though the people that fought the war were mainly the middle class and the working class, there were a lot of us who listened to all kinds of music. Some of it infused with Vietnam lyrics, some not, that enjoyed it and listened to it and sort of read into it.
How do you feel when you hear these songs today? Because these are songs you heard during one of the most potent times in your life, true for a lot of the people who are serving in Vietnam. Do they still kind of click something on into you and make you remember when you hear them?
Absolutely. I mean, I think music can do that anyway. If you're listening to Andy Williams this time of year and you hear him break into that song, it's the most wonderful time of the year. You go, oh my God, I don't want to hear that again. But you know when you heard that song or if you heard Silent Night. It's the same thing with this, and it puts you back in that place, especially if you're in a war and in a stressful time. But I think what's important is that these music-based memories have enabled a lot of vets that we've talked to finally be able to tell their story, to maybe understand what they've been through, and to get back home and hopefully heal in the process, because we did a lousy job of that with Vietnam veterans.
Is that because these songs they're kind of like a safe space for these vets?
I think that's part of it. I also think it's because it's just who they were. It resonates with them in terms of the kind of person they were, maybe before they went or while they were there, when they came back home. Sometimes that can be bittersweet. But as I said, I think part of that can be healing and helpful.
So what are some other unlikely songs that would be more characteristic of the times that you've surfaced?
Well, there's a song called Detroit City by a country singer named Bobby Bear. I didn't know that song. I didn't listen to a lot of country music when I grew up. I've gotten to appreciate it a lot more. And that song, because it's got a line in there I Want to Go Home, was played and played and played and played. It was out in the mid-60s. You know, I never heard the song. But, boy, you could not go to a jukebox or maybe hear a band covering some music in Vietnam and not hear that song. Sloop John B. was another one.
Yeah, I think a lot of Beach Boys, like, wouldn't it be nice
I wanna
and
go
stuff
home
like that.
Line, yeah. You know, and we got to get out of this place. It's just like the quintessential Vietnam song. Was originally written for the Righteous Brothers. Was not about Vietnam or getting out of Vietnam. It ended up becoming the anthem for Vietnam vets, Vietnam soldiers, and now it's played at all Vietnam vets reunions because it was this whole notion of, you know, we want to get out of this place alive, we want to get back home, we want to be with our families, we want to be safe.
We're talking with Doug Bradley right now about the music of the Vietnam War era, and you can join the show. Are you a Vietnam War veteran, and was there a song that was especially meaningful for you? Or as a civilian, what songs captured that time in history for you? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
That's 1-800-642-1234. We'll take your call coming up after the news. I'm Mike Arnold.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Mike Arnold. We continue our conversation with Doug Bradley. He's sharing some songs from the Vietnam War era and talking about what they meant to troops and civilians.
And you can call in with your song suggestions and your questions, your memories, and what these songs may have meant to you. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Doug, we're listening to little Marvin Gaye here.
Spectacular.
This one's got to hold some memories, huh?
It has a ton, not just for the kind of wonderful breakthrough song it was, but what's interesting is the entire album, it's a concept album called What's Going On, and it is based on Marvin Gaye's brother Frankie's experience in Vietnam. Frankie Gaye was in Vietnam while Marvin Gaye was a star. They corresponded. When Frankie got home, he sat down with Marvin for like 24 hours straight. Marvin wanted to hear all about the experience and wrote about it. And if you listen to What's Going On as it moves from song to song to song, from this song to What's Happening, Brother, it ends with Inner City Blues. It's all about Frankie's trying to get back into America. Mm. Fantastic.
We're talking about music from the Vietnam War era with Doug Bradley, and you can join the conversation. The number is 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or you can email at talk@wpr.org. Let's go to the phones now. Rich in Barron, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. That's better than being called a Baron Rich.
That's true. That's a good point. So do you have memories of the Vietnam era and music that you listened to?
Yes. In 71, towards the end of Vietnam, though, my draft number was 83. Well, I really didn't want to go to Vietnam and get shot at, so I found out from the Army that if I enlisted for 3, I could pick where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do. So I picked military police and Europe. I ended up in Germany, and I say I was 110 miles behind enemy lines, which was West Berlin.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I got there March 72, and then later 72, being military police, I almost got to go to Munich for the 72 Olympics after that terrorist attack.
So what kind of music did you hear in Berlin? Did you have you had English language radio stations you listened to, or military, you know?
Oh, yeah. We had Armed Forces Radio and Armed Forces TV, and so it would be the same songs that stretched across to Vietnam. Ones that would be requested every now and then would be We Got to Get Out of This Place by the Animals. And then quite a few times I worked at Checkpoint Charlie, and someone would always request, since our little shack was in the middle of the street, a song by Luden Wainwright III of dead skunk in the middle of the road.
And it's stinking to high heaven.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Rich, thanks for that call. A dead skunk, Rich, in the middle of the road. I remember that
from when I was
a kid.
Loud and Wainwright.
And you can hear. You can definitely hear some political stuff going
absolutely,
on there.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so what would that song be talking about? You got the dead rat. I mean, just the...
But, you know, I mean, it's sort of like maybe a waist deep in the big muddy kind of thing. You know, we've got this dead stuff in the middle
of
the road.
And we're sort of stuck in this thing. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you to Rich.
Thanks, Rich.
And let's go next to Eric joining us in Madison. Hi, Eric.
Hello. Am I on?
Yes, you are. What do you think about a memory of this music?
Well, first of all, I wanted to thank Doug for his service.
Thank you.
I'm too young actually to have a memory, but my connection is that while living in New York City, I acted in and produced a play about the Vietnam War. It's Still Life by Emily Mann, which is a great piece of writing.
Wow.
And we had to come up with the soundtrack ourselves for the play, you know, to fill some of the gaps. And the one that really resonated with me, and I wanted to know from Doug if it was you know, legitimate. I won't remember the name of the song, but it was by Country Joe.
Sure, and, absolutely.
There was one famous song off this soundtrack that we played as sort of our anthem at the beginning of the play, and it, as an actor, it really brought up a lot of emotions for me. But I don't really know the history.
Well, Eric, thanks for that call. And actually, we have a little bit of that. Let's play that first, so people know
Great.
The song before we talk about
Super.
It.
Super.
Well, come on, all of you big strong men. Uncle Sam needs your help again. Got himself in a terrible jam way down yonder in Vietnam. Put down your books and pick up a gun. We're gonna have a whole lot of fun.
Now, Doug Bradley, I mean, there are some people who might think that would not be something that vets would want to be listening to.
You're right,
it's a hippie
absolutely
song,
about
right?
that, Mike, and I'm sure there are still some that don't. But we had a chance to interview Country Joe out in San Francisco a few years ago, specifically about this song and his career. And he was a Navy veteran. He had been in the military, and he intended the song as sort of a gallows humor. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's one thing you've learned about guys and women in the military. Is that there's a lot of gallows humor because you want to laugh about your situation, you sort of make it kind of exaggerated and dark. And that's what Joe was doing with this song. But of course, given the context and the volatility of the Vietnam era, it was only seen and heard one way.
Right.
So it's really kind of interesting because we've had colonels, gung-ho, you know, fighters say that they like the song and they like what Country Joe was doing.
And that song was famously played at Woodstock, right?
Yes,
So a lot of people think that it's more of an anti-war.
Absolutely. And yet it resonates. And I'm not saying with everybody, but it's a song that comes up a lot in our interviews. And like I said, it's not completely disparaged by GIs in Vietnam and Vietnam vets.
And that song, The Fixin' to Die Rag, by the way, by Country Joe that we just heard. And you're talking about how this music, even today, can raise people's ire. And there are people who say that even today we're still fighting the Vietnam War or aspects of that era. We're still playing that out in American politics and culture. Do you think that's true of the music, too?
I think it can be. I think the great thing is that the music sort of somehow finds a way to, I won't say completely eliminate it, but diminish it. And I think it's because, like I said, whether you served, or you stayed, or you left, or you hid, or you deferred, like Dick Cheney. We all had the same soundtrack. We listened to the same music. We felt some of the same things. We were involved in all of the same tumult, and I think that connects us now in ways that maybe we didn't see back then. But I agree with your earlier point, Veronica, and that is that in many ways we're still fighting this war, and I think part of that has to do with the lack of recognition and homecoming and welcome that we gave a lot of the Vietnam vets. They didn't have to bear the burden of all of the downside of that war, and they have. I mean, we didn't help bring them home. The music, can.
Yeah, let's take one more call. Bob from Grafton. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
I was in Vietnam from 1968 to 70.
Welcome home.
Up in Lai K. I'm sorry, what?
I said welcome home.
Thank you. And then I was in Khan Juk in the Brunsack Secret Zone. And in fact, when I was in the South, the only music I could hear or any radio I could hear was basically from Hanoi.
Hanoi Hannah.
And the only song I remember, this is horrible to say, is Nancy Sinatra's These Boots Are Meant for a Walk.
What's horrible?
Did you like that song? Did you like?
I liked it because I was in the Phoenix program, if you know what that is.
Yep.
And frankly, it was the only American music or people I got to talk to.
And so was the intent of playing that song to convince you to walk away from the war? Was that like some sort of a site?
I was a volunteer during the Vietnam War, and I was an older man when I went in. I was 26 when I went in. So I didn't particularly believe in the war, but I had a special skill that was very useful for the military. So, no, I just thought it was kind of, a fun song. And bear in mind, if you're isolated, you have no Americans or people who speak English. There's
right.
No first language. That's actually, they used to play that quite a bit on the Hanoi radio. So,
That's a song, Bob, thanks for the call and for your service. That's a song that comes up a lot in you. And Nancy Sinatra has appeared, she went to Vietnam during the war, one of the few artists that did. And then she sings and participates at a lot of Vietnam vet reunions. She's still really popular, and that song's still popular. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you, Bob, so much for that call. And in our last minute here, Otis Redding, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. Let's hear a little bit of that. This is another one that has some special meaning. Doug, can you leave us with some thoughts about this?
Well, it really speaks for itself. I mean, regrettably, Otis, passed here in Lake Monona. But this is a song about loneliness, waiting to go 2,000 miles from home to make this dock. It's the kind of song that, if you were in Vietnam, you were going to Vietnam, you were coming back from Vietnam, it struck a chord with you. It still does.
Well, I think we'll all be listening to these songs a little differently after this. Thank you so much for joining us,
Thank
Doug.
You.
That was Doug Bradley, Vietnam veteran and former Army journalist. His forthcoming book with Craig Werner is called We Gotta Get Out of This Place.
Coming up, we'll take a look at some top stories from this past week in Wisconsin.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Mike Arnold.
News-wise, there's been a lot of action in Wisconsin this week. Joining us now to talk us through some of it is WPR's Assistant News Director, Noah Ovshinsky.
Noah, good to have you here this week.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me, and happy Friday.
So what are the biggest stories this week?
Well, there was a few. The governor signed two pieces of legislation of note this week. The first dealt with Native American mascots, and the other delays really what is a major change to the state's Medicaid program, which was scheduled to happen January 1st.
Well, let's start off with the mascot issue first. What does this legislation do?
Yeah, this has been a very controversial piece of legislation. We've talked a lot about it here in the newsroom. And basically what it does is it changes the way school districts and the state deals with mascots and nicknames that people find offensive for any variety of reasons. In practical terms, we're really talking mainly, though, about Native American mascots. And before we can talk about the bill that was just passed, let's press rewind for a second and talk about what the law was before this new law came into effect. And basically, it used to be that people who found a certain mascot to be offensive, this is under state law that's maybe 3 years old, if people found a certain mascot to be offensive, they could file a complaint with the Department of Instruction.
Just one person could do that.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. They could file a complaint to the Department of Instruction, and the department could then hold a hearing based on that complaint. And this process over the course of the last few years has led to the dropping of a few mascots.
Now, did the governor give a reason why he signed it?
He did, and he said it was mainly an issue of free speech. He said, people are free to really say what they want, and even if it's distasteful, he says, look, it's really up for people to show kids or others and educate them about how certain, phrases and symbols and mascots, can be offensive, but it's not necessarily, up to the state to have a low bar for people to criticize them. The one interesting thing about this is, as I mentioned before, the Department of Instruction used to be in charge of this. Under this new bill that the governor signed, it now puts the Department of Administration in charge of these complaints. That's interesting because the DOA is an agency that the governor, for all intents and purposes, you know, controls. And the bill also establishes a much higher bar for people submitting complaints.
So in the old days, one person could do it and there you go. And now you have to have a petition, right?
Yeah. Now people who find a mascot to be offensive, they have to submit a petition with enough signatures that essentially equals 10% of the district's student body.
So that's quite a few.
Yeah, depending on the district, that could be quite a few signatures. And they also, the people who complain, also have to prove that these mascots are, you know, discriminatory in some way.
Now, my guess would be that this did not satisfy a number of people. What did critics say about the governor signing this bill this week?
Yeah, obviously there are folks, especially in the tribes here in Wisconsin, who had an issue with this new bill. And basically what they say, simply put, that it's just something that it essentially promotes race-based stereotyping. You know, why have these mascots these days? And they fear that it does promote that kind of stereotyping.
Well, let's move on to the Badger Care bill. The governor signed that. What exactly does that do?
So let's again press the rewind button for a second. Originally, under a plan that's been championed by Governor Walker over the course of the last year or so, on January 1st, 72,000 parents and caretakers whose income is just above the poverty level, they were supposed to be moved off of Badger Care, which is the state's Medicaid program, and onto the federal insurance marketplace that was set up under the Affordable Care Act. Now, at the same time, the state was going to add 83,000 childless adults who are below the federal poverty level to Badger Care. So there's some addition of people and then subtraction. And what really this bill did this week is it delays both of those things from happening until April.
Now, why did the legislature push for this change and why did the governor sign it?
Basically, they came up with a bill in response to the ongoing struggles people are having with the marketplace websites, as you might remember and as certainly I remember. When it was first launched a few months ago, the main government website wasn't all that functional. People were having a hard time signing up or even finding out about the insurance that was available to them. It was really a setback for the Obama administration. And since then, you know, the feds have been feverishly trying to fix it. They've brought in some folks from the tech industry to make this website work.
Now, putting the bill aside for a second, yeah. The governor's plan to move certain people off and certain people into Badger Care, that's been somewhat controversial too, right?
It has been. A lot of people who are advocates for the poor take issue with removing people off of Badger Care because they argue that these are folks who, even if they were to be moved to the federal marketplace, couldn't afford the insurance in the first place, even with government help, even with money from the federal government, they don't make enough money to afford it. And so people who are advocates for the poor, you know, fear that they're really going to have a hard time getting quality medical care if they're taken off Badger Care.
So what else happened this week?
Yeah. So really, the other thing I would say is the job numbers. You know, these job numbers are released every so often, and we do talk about them here at the radio station. And I think these job numbers have become even more significant as we've seen the country as a whole improving. Also, we're now basically in the beginnings of a governor's race.
Right.
And of course, jobs are going to be a big part of that campaign. So basically what happened this week was what economists call the gold standard of job numbers. They were released this week, and what they show is really – a disheartening view of Wisconsin's employment picture, to put it frankly.
In what way?
Basically, what the numbers show is during the 12-month period ending this past June, private sector jobs increased by just 1% in Wisconsin. And if you look at the country as a whole, that puts us at 37th in the nation as far as private sector job growth.
Now, every region of the country is having sort of different, you know, numbers coming out. Some states seem to be doing well because of the oil and gas boom in places like North Dakota and stuff like that. But others have been better overall with their economies. How did Wisconsin compare, let's say, to Great Lakes neighbors?
Yeah, I think, you know, as you say, you know, some of these comparing states are like apples and oranges.
Right.
But I do think it is helpful to look at the Great Lakes states. We have, you know, relatively similar economies.
But it's right, though, that like if you look at a state where it's just off the charts,
yeah,
it could throw things off.
Exactly. And yeah, you point to North Dakota. That's a perfect case. The oil, gas, and industry there. Oil, gas industry is just – it's booming. So let's compare Wisconsin to Michigan with these numbers. Michigan's growth – now, keeping in mind, our growth was 1%. Michigan's growth was 2.8%, and Minnesota was 2.1%. So both states had more than twice as much job growth as Wisconsin.
Has this been a trend in the region?
If you look at the last 3 years, I think you can say it's been a trend. Overall, Wisconsin added a total of 24,000 jobs in the 12 months leading up to June. The previous year, during the same time, Wisconsin added 38,000. And then the year before that, it was 40,000. So you see the numbers of additional jobs slowly going down.
Sort of a downward trend.
Yeah, it's
at a time when everything nationwide is going on.
Well, yeah. For the most part, many states are reporting, you know, as we see here, you know, percentages of 2% and above as far as job creation.
Now, you know, normally this time of year, the holidays and everything, you'd think nothing was going on. But the news department never sleeps at Wisconsin Public
Radio.
What kind of things are you working on next week?
So even as people are celebrating the holidays next week, we've got several stories on tap for our listeners. Gil Halstead is working on a story that looks at the court rulings that could be coming down here in the next few months that have to do with abortion here in the state. More specifically, the legality of a new law that requires abortion providers to have admitting privileges at local hospitals, which, in fact, if you look at practically speaking, makes it very difficult to provide abortion services. So the courts will be looking at that. Gil's going to be reporting on that next week. Brianne Chasso is working on a story about an innovative dog shelter in La Crosse that takes care of dogs while their homeless owners look for a place to live. So it's a situation where, you know, this organization will essentially babysit these dogs. And once a homeless person finds a home, the dogs go back to the family. So a really interesting, nice, I think, holiday story. And I'd say the other thing, too, Sean Johnson sat down with the governor yesterday. And based on that interview, there'll be a few stories next week. And I don't want to give too much away, especially to our competitors. But I will say this. I'll show a little leg. One of those stories has to do with what the governor has planned for the state income tax for the coming year.
And that was something that was brought up this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. The governor has expressed some interest in getting rid of the income tax and raising perhaps some other taxes to make up for that. Sean will be talking about that next week. And finally, Rich Kramer's got a story. He's going to be taking a look back at the weather of 2013. So as opposed to looking forward, Rich is going to look back and he's going to talk about the weather of 2013, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
All right. Well, that's something to look forward to. Does the news department have any sort of holiday traditions that they like to do around this time of year?
We work.
You work.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
That's
well,
it.
I'm glad you're working for us, Noah. Thanks so much for coming in, and we'll talk to you again next week.
It was good to be here. Thanks.
That was WPR's assistant news director, Noah Ovshinsky. He's here every week to talk to us about what made news in Wisconsin and what's coming up. And speaking of coming up Monday on Central Time, we'll be speaking with a Madison area pastor who says the city is selling African Americans short. And if you're a big fan of nuts, it's a big nut eating season, I guess, right now. Well, we'll find out why nuts aren't just a delicious snack, but it turns out they're pretty healthy for you, too.
I think I can figure out how to make that very unhealthy, nuts. I eat too many nuts. I think if you eat a can of nuts, they're unhealthy. What do you think?
Well, especially if they're coated in butter and cinnamon and sugar the way I like them.
Yeah, me too. So we'll ask about that, I guess. We'll say how much, you know, even though they're healthy, how much should you really eat? And speaking of healthy driving, that is, you might want to be a little careful if you're traveling around for the holidays, if you're planning on going anywhere this weekend or anything. There is a... I think there's still some freezing rain possible in some parts of Wisconsin and the southern parts of the state. The high should be, you know, the 20s to lower 30s. We're expecting the snow really to come in. I mean, actually, through the day, there's a chance of some snow or freezing drizzle. But the real snow stuff's going to start happening tomorrow night and into Sunday. So that's really when it's going to happen quite a bit. And then cloudy on Monday. So something to keep your eye out on if you have to travel. Take it easy. Be careful. Drink plenty of fluids, all that stuff. You're listening to Central Time on is it a Friday?
It is a Friday, my friend.
It is a Friday. We have more of the show coming up in just a little bit. We also have the news from National Public Radio in just a couple seconds.
This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.